Allez, vamos. Tinha com né, né? Ó, da que eu as tomba da tempo da tomba da midim bem e na né, da que eu as sabe na tinha com né, da tomba da tempo de sabe na que eu de que chava da né, de que chava na de que chava de chava de essa gente, né, da ó de chuva, né? Aí, da o bigi com né, a gente tinha sansingi chimba tanga, le chugi chimba tanga de gena, muyu kunyani chimba de nehan kewa chewa res. Me chubi chewa da sansingi chewa kubi na ne, ane sansingi chubi chewa kubi de gena, kewa chewa res. Ede ane, ode chubi di gor maa shubar oda.
Good afternoon. So this morning, we looked at the support of vows as being making an incredible difference to the amount of either virtue or non-virtue that an act will result in. And thereafter, we looked at the third of the four great strengths, being that by way of the thing or the object. So this refers to, in terms of the object that one is engaging with, for example, with the illustration of generosity, that of giving a material generosity is not as virtuous as that of, or not as meritorious as that of giving of Dharma. Or if, in terms of making offerings to the Buddhas, the greater offering is offering of practice. So this is what where we came to this morning.
Kulung with one that gave a chishon, that divine native chishon, that you got Java shared what in ma.
Then we come now to the fourth, that of attitude or motivation, great strength by way of the attitude.
Shiva Nihidine, Rimbochi is Pumbo Lies, that then again, Tonsum Ye Simje Tam Je Soso Ne San Ye Ye Chudin Rip them Jelas. Deda la yang, gawa jewa, nye du, di dang du, jawa tam je ki, di dang du, jeba tang, jeba le, ane jang sem ki, tam je kien bi ki, sem na ma zha wa, me to jik sam do wa, sun na ma wa ra sung des.
Reading from the text, just hear this second line, I've changed quite a bit. The Heap of Jewels Sutra says that if all the sentient beings of the billion universes were each to create a stupa of the Buddha as massive as Mount Meru, and if they and all those who are objects of respect were to pay respect to them for 10 million eons, this would not match the merit generated by a bodhisattva who never separated from the mind aspiring for omniscience, throws one single flower.
先生，别全部学，我是不行。先，日不怎么接了，这日不拿进，全部学，我是想接的。但米里里里里，确定日里里里，但东西也先接，他们接也，地那的米里里里里给，咱先接里里里里给，俺们所说呢，上一月确定日不怎么接了，再上一月确定把先先别全部学，我是不行。日不怎么接了，这日不拿进，全部学，我是想接的。但米里里里里确定日里里里，但东西也先接，他们接那张呢，你别给的那个确定，全部里里用过了吧？这边，俺接到了，俺接到了呀，搞我接我，你都是地当的，今年都地当的接我，他们接也地当的接吧嘞，是不是？俺的那个接呢，他的那个接了呀，全部学的了。
So, as elsewhere, Lama Tsongkhapa quotes from a sutra presenting a comparison. So this comparison is of sentient beings, those who have not who are not bodhisattvas. So comparing non-bodhisattvas to bodhisattvas. So in the presenting the situation of for the comparison of non-bodhisattvas, if all the sentient beings of the billion universes, so in other words, as many all the sentient beings that exist, or all the non-bodhisattvas that exist, were each to create a stupa, so each and every single one themselves individually were to create a stupa, and one of immense sizes, as massive as Mount Meru, and they didn't just leave it at the creation or the construction of the stupa. If they and all those who are objects of respect were to pay respect to them for 10 million eons. So each of these beings, they and each other were to pay respect to these stupas for an incredible period of time. So that's the one part of the comparison. So one can imagine from such an imaginary act being done, so all the sentient beings throughout the world systems, all of them creating a massive stupa, making offerings for an immense period of time, one can imagine just how much merit would be created. But then if one compares that to just a single bodhisattva, so one ordinary bodhisattva, the text continues, this would not match the merit generated by a bodhisattva who never separated from the mind aspiring for omniscience. So this is a different way of saying aspiring to become a Buddha for the sake of all sentient beings. It's never separated from that mind, so they have uncontrived bodhicitta. And then more literally, it's the word throw, but the meaning would be like offer, but toss, perhaps toss just a single flower. So just from that act, an ordinary bodhisattva, being with uncontrived bodhicitta, merely tossing a single flower to your stupa would create more merit than the merit created by all those ordinary beings. The reason is as presented earlier. What makes a bodhisattva stand out from non-bodhisattvas is that quality of bodhicitta on their continuum. And bodhicitta has these two aspects. So the one aspect is they are wanting to benefit not just themselves, not just their loved ones, but each and every being. And it's not just each and every being merely accepted on a theoretical basis. They've developed a closeness, a tenderness towards all beings, whomever they are. And they want to benefit all these beings in the most important of ways, not just to enable them to overcome suffering temporarily, but wanting them to be guided to attain complete freedom from suffering, so they never have to suffer again. So they're holding in their heart equally each and every single sentient being and wanting to help them in the most important of ways. And the second aspect is that to do so, the bodhisattva has committed to becoming a Buddha, because it's only by becoming a Buddha that the bodhisattva will be able to bring to reality, to fulfill their aspiration. And they know that to become a Buddha is not something that's going to be achieved quickly, but it's going to take an immense amount of effort over an incredible period of time. But that doesn't daunt them at all. Why it doesn't daunt them is they know as they gather strength and skills and capacity, they'll be benefiting others, benefiting ever more beings in ever more skillful ways. So this just gives strength to their mind. So therefore, because of these two qualities on the mind of the bodhisattva, holding all beings dear, and not just holding them dear, wanting to lead them to gain complete freedom of suffering, and to do so to become a Buddha, with such a motivation, even doing something like offering just a flower, not a big deal, just a flower to the Buddhas, and doing so only once, they create so much merit because of the quality of that motivation. That we should then take an illustration such as this is as inspiration. One, to develop deep respect for those who have generated bodhicitta, deep respect for bodhisattvas, as well as to develop a deep yearning to join them, to also become a bodhisattva. And not to merely to have a yearning for that, but to act out that yearning. And the way we act that yearning out is we sit quietly, we reflect on the sufferings of samsara, generating a determination to gain freedom from the sufferings of samsara, and use that as a basis to generate love and compassion for all beings, wanting all beings without exception to also attain a state freed of suffering, abiding in lasting happiness, and develop then the wholehearted resolve, the determination, I will do so. It's my responsibility to ensure each and every being transforms their mind into a state freed of suffering. And to do so, I must become a Buddha. And thereby one generates bodhicitta oneself. And then by dedicating that merit, one is creating the causes to become a bodhisattva oneself. Moreover, if one with this motivation then makes some offerings or does some prostrations or go about one's activities, whatever it may be, with such a motivation, one is accruing the virtue that will lead to us becoming bodhisattvas and eventually Buddhas. So this, in terms of our capacity, is entirely possible. And this is a focus for our life, to develop this our habituation to this way of thinking. And in this way, bring it the time when we will actually arise as bodhisattvas ever closer. So hence, it is the attitude with which we engage in activities, or the motivation we cultivate, is so very important. And therefore, you will have been receiving the advice for years now. Start your day, generate the motivation of bodhicitta. Try and engage in your various activities with the motivation of bodhicitta, because the result is so fantastic. Lama Tsongkhapa continues. Likewise, a difference in attitude. So your attitude or motivation, Lama Tsongkhapa is presenting how, as one develops one's motivation grows in strength and capacity, the virtue that from one's endeavors will also grow as well. Likewise, difference in attitudes, such as aspiring for higher or lower goals. So this then refers to the goals of the Dharma. So the initial goal is to develop a determination to achieve further excellent rebirths. And the middling aspiration is to develop a deep yearning to gain liberation from the suffering realms of samsara, freedom from the pain and misery of being a samsaric being. And the greatest goal, the supreme goal, the highest goal, is that of Buddhahood, the determination to become a Buddha for the sake of others. And this then links to or focusing on one's own or others' purpose or goal, where one's own purpose would be to achieve a good rebirth just for oneself, or liberation for oneself, and others would be the goal for to become a Buddha for the sake of others. And as one develops one's motivation, in particular, when one develops the motivation, the supreme motivation of wanting to become a Buddha for the sake of others, the preceding stages will naturally come about. Because to become a Buddha, one needs an ongoing succession of excellent rebirths. So therefore, one will continue to gain excellent rebirths, and one will eventually attain one's liberation. One's mind will become liberated from the afflictions. Thereby, one will gain freedom from suffering as one progresses towards the eventual attainment of the highest of goals, which is for the purpose of others.
安达今年安达让达先一的让达先一的那明年是的那让给端的给让一的一样一个切多但金巴达村松一个开发的开发起来先一端的三大先一主要的中华三一个三大节给给我主巴的但第给我切瓦的是不是但让达先一端的明年是的他让给端的明年给我主巴的来给我的来他先一端的先一端的三大节
Furthermore, in terms of self and other, one's own or other's purpose, when one engages in a virtuous act, let's say generosity, if one is doing so that one achieves a good result for oneself, one creates a certain level of merit, but if one is doing so as to benefit others, in particular all others, then one accrues so much merit. So the difference here, whether it's generosity or another virtuous act, is in one's motivation. Is one doing so sincerely for oneself or sincerely for others?
で、電話とんだ、三大で、そうそう、電話とんだ、ランニングも、そう、現代とんだ、チェシー、そうそう、マジで、そうそう、教育者、そうそう、教育者、三大で、ユングルは。あ、で、三国で、いいね、で、ユングルも、先、三国で、たんじゅうけ、どんだりゃ、あ、ね、え、チェケ、ディギュー、ダン、パンドヤー、ディ、ドンアセイ、ドンダーレ、ジャワチー、ギュー、ギュー、ギュー、ギュー、ギュー、ギュー、ギュー、ギュー、ギュー、ギュー、ギュー、ギュー、ギュー、ギュー、ギュー、ギュー、ギュー、ギュー、ギュー、ギュー、ギュー、ギュー、ギュー、ギュー、ギュー、ギュー、ギュー、ギュー、ギュー、ギュー、ギュー、ギュー、ギュー、ギュー、ギュー、ギュー、ギュー、ギュー、ギュー、 제 되는마 이 파셜 파기인 선비게 다 소소 죽인 선고마 미 현대 이게 파기인 선비게 사지들 파기에게 삼단단이 나 던다 현 게게 던다 현리에 판도 삼단지 파기고르데 이나 라님 루어르바데 파지 파셜레세들레 샘진 현대들레 소소들레어바다 어 디나시레스 지사다 현기 던다 삼단지 제도 소소기 다 라슈기 소소기 게와데 Sujigeta Pinishan, Dunga Siada, Shin, Digi Tuya, Dandala, Nahanjigi, Samu Shankona, Samtaji, Kao Jubana, Kao the Sujugos and Anzugor, what a Susujugora, Susuju de Kao the Soso Sagur, what a Soso Sabanza, Dibu Tigi, and Soso Jungor, what is that? She and the other Shangi Dunda Pandoru Kao Rutation, Susu Dunda Samatana Soso Yonra Sesame Besamundi, Ned Samtangu Mardi, John Ragmares is worth it.
To develop a genuine attitude that places the needs of others first and foremost, this is difficult to do because there is the fear, but what about myself? So when training, one needs to develop this a clear understanding that by genuinely working for others, you will not go without. So this needs a regular attention from oneself so as to eventually develop a genuine, other-focused attitude. And so a reason that you can apply is that when genuinely working for the welfare of others and achieving the welfare of others, their lives are improving through your efforts, you are not being excluded from the benefit of your activities because on whose continuum is this virtue being accumulated? It's on your own continuum. Even though you may have a genuine attitude of wanting to place the needs, the fulfillments of the needs of others first, that genuine motivation, where does it abide? On your continuum. Therefore, the resulting virtue abides on your continuum, even though you are focused on fulfilling the needs of others. So in our initial training, we need to be very aware of this, Because we need to overcome this self-centered attitude, that fear, that, but what about me? I don't want to suffer. And then to give an analogy, if you are taking a group of people somewhere, you're driving them somewhere, and when you arrive at the destination, not only do they arrive at the destination, but so do you. It's not like you are still left at the starting point and they've arrived at their destination. You have gone there with them. Likewise, when helping others, you are not left out. You are not left alone now to suffer and others are having everything go well for them. The virtue that you're accumulating is being accumulated on your continuum.
That is something very nice. That in there, some of the shoe trawler down, and the gun ring loot on air, Gavat shoe chase your head or dayang, then some of the day, see the summer tire, Gunon day, see what a gun a day, shoe trashen down, gun ring to you, Gunny, and shepherd's horse.
Namatsungkhapa continues to talk about the quality of the motivation to cultivate. The attitude or the motivation should be understood also in terms of greater or lesser intensity and longer or shorter duration. Think about the intensity of the motivation. Here, it should be clear how the intensity of the motivation will have a direct impact on the amount of merit created and the quality of the outcome. So when one's wish to be of benefit comes from deep within, immense virtue will be created. But if one either doesn't really make much attention, effort to cultivate a virtuous motivation, or one generates a motivation, but it's not much more than a mere recitation of words as opposed to heartfelt, then the amount of virtue created, the benefit that will follow, is greatly reduced. It's really useful if one has the habit to generate a virtuous motivation at the start of one's day, and in particular, if one can remind oneself of that motivation so it stays fresh within. Then one's activities will be much more influenced by that motivation, and thereby the quality of the results will be greatly enhanced. And here there are two key aspects in terms of generating a powerful motivation. One is to recall benefits, and secondly, to do so together with reasons. So, for example, through recalling the great qualities of the Buddha, in terms of the various qualities of the Buddha and the kindness that the Buddha has brought into the life of yourself and so many beings, a deep faith and appreciation for the Buddha will arise. And using that then to generate the wish, may I become a Buddha too, so that I can have such a positive impact on others and thereby help others also to gain freedom from suffering, to ease their suffering and eventually gain liberation from suffering. And using this then, both reasons as well as a recollection of benefits to generate a powerful motivation before engaging in a virtuous act, the quality of that motivation then is much more likely to be sincere, to be heartfelt, rather than merely reciting a formula in one's mind.
If
we think of two different children and their attitude towards their parents, so one child has a real appreciation for what their parents do for them, or how hard they work, or their sacrifice to fulfill the needs of the child. The child recognizes, I'm only have something to eat and I'm clothed and have an education because of the hard work of my parents, because of the sacrifices of my parents. So such a child will have a real appreciation for their parents. And when they act in ways to help the parents, you can imagine it's coming from a sincere place, a good place. But another child takes that the same activities, the same kindness of their parents for granted, thinking, well, of course, this is what parents are meant to do, and this is what they should be doing. There's nothing special here. Can you see the very different attitude? And therefore, the second child, should they do anything for their parents, they won't be doing it with much feeling, with much warmth. And therefore, we can see how different the merit will be that they each create.
So
that's in terms of greater or less intensity, but also in terms of duration, longer or shorter duration. So if one sometimes, or just very briefly, thinks about the benefits, for example, of restraining one's physical and verbal behavior from non-virtue and restraining one's mind from the afflictions. If this is just an occasional thought and it's only a fleeting thought, then whilst worthwhile, the benefit is quite little. Whereas if one meditates, reflects deeply for a sustained period on the benefits of restraining one's physical, verbal, and mental behavior, the effect on one's mind and thereby one's motivation will be immense.
Rana Shengi Samdane, Shengi Duna Samdaji, Kevatuvene Kevachawa. 단 뒤뒤 이렇게 삼다바네 균링부 가서 삼로 숙칭에 삼네 군로 숙자고 되네게 전에 개와 주바네 개와 숙차와 되네네 대한 무티지 주바네 개와 숙차와래 해서지 어두신에 개와 개체 용구래서 되네게 송바네 당아도 뒤 하고 위 전에 당하는 집에 가는 남고 월세네 제자다 군원 마선에 삼로 숙차와데 단 만족에 Semjan Tamjiyutana, San Yokoba Torsho, Sibetan Yusim, Samtamana, Samadi, the dealer Shushawa Chimera, Rada, Samu Chachawa Mere, Samadi Tuna, Samdana, Diana, and Topja Samdana, Nekasore, Topja Samdana, Topja Semjan Tamjiyutana, San Yokoba Toredida, Topja Tardu Ruba, Chita San Yokoba Tora Chigin Simbi, Topja San Yokoba Tila Samta, Dene, and Jige, Diam. 然后呢, 先你 doing it, 先生家, 他们就给端到三单国了吧? 先, 他的那个, 他端到了, 将于先生就过年了, 将要去给我出国一呢, 安定了,该参国了是呢, 公路家切瓦的参与了, 公路呢, 三路公路切削的离国了吧? 然后呢, 先你一端呢, 先你端到三单国了吧? 那的呢, 那个说的, 特别叫他们一些呢, 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 第三代的, 第三代的, 那第二代的, 那第二代的, 就是当然主义那样,安都是那样的能够的,是共同建设性别国内,那什么特别像三月国王特别切多,那什么叫他们这个三月国王特别切多,全部都是学生别国内,那些的那给我住国内,的那给我住别的,但目的一些,尊重一些,那你们来接国内,是什么的,你不知道,都送过来,定安的都是,你们是来买,写不了叫我写的,那一套那样,就是连国内是阿国接国内是。 其实尊重一些人们的基本的军人部目的的理由的话，这是我的军人部其实目的很简单，军人部简单培养起来的，现在的三大基本的七三三五的话是共同修起来的，三个多，然后呢，先就给那先给对先对明白的三个多，那那的特别这么大的特别充满的超多九八的理由的，那的呢，那那目的些尊重一些的目的基本的。
Yeah, then we've covered some key points in terms of the cultivation of a motivation. So you've heard so many times the motivation is crucial to what determines whether something is virtuous or not and how virtuous it is. So take these key points mentioned here, take them to heart, hold them in mind, and live in accordance with them. So specifically here, referring to likewise the difference in attitude, such as aspiring for a higher or lower goal, or focusing on one's own or other's purpose, should be understood also in terms of greater or lesser intensity and longer or shorter duration. So take these points to heart. And amongst the various motivations, so if we look at the first point, higher or lower goal, there is no higher motivation than that of bodhicitta. So try and generate this motivation of bodhicitta again and again. Try and have this as the guiding light in your life. And to do so, you need to meditate in the way you've been guided in so many times. Because it's through this process of engaging in this meditation every day and trying to sustain it throughout the day, that it will become habituated to you. It will become who you are. It will be your very essence, your very heart within. And why bodhicitta is so praised is because of these two qualities of bodhicitta, or these two aspects of bodhicitta. So the first has the component, the two components, of being in relation to all sentient beings equally. One abandons the feeling of, this is my group, these are the ones who matter more than those. This is abandoned. So every single sentient being throughout the realms of the universe, All of them, one holds as dear. And holding them as dear isn't just, doesn't stop at a feeling of closeness and affection, but one knows one has a responsibility towards them. In particular, to help them gain freedom from suffering. So this is crucial, because it comes with the understanding of what freedom from suffering means. With that understanding, when one helps others, even in insignificant ways, one will be doing so with the motivation to be able to help them in the most important of ways. And that then links to the second part of the motivation of bodhicitta, which is one wants to become a Buddha for the sake of all beings, because it's only then that one can interact with others free of any hindrance on one's own mind, and thereby interact with them in the way that's most suited to them there and then. So therefore, this motivation of bodhicitta has these three aspects. It's in relation to all sentient beings, wanting to free them from suffering entirely, or guide them to gain freedom from suffering entirely, and to do so, to become a Buddha. So with this developed, these first two parts, a higher goal is achieved, and one is focusing on others' purpose. So these two parts, one is already doing to the very best of one's capacity. And to bring about intensity, what goes on to next, intensity, this will come from repeatedly engaging these meditations, hearing teachings, reflecting on the teachings, opening oneself up, becoming habituated to this way of thinking. And this process of repetition, which leads to habituation, impacts the duration. So thereby, engaging in this meditation the way that you've been guided many times, will fulfill all these components of the superior motivation. And also, it leads to the cultivation of enthusiastic perseverance. Because to become a bodhisattva, and then as a bodhisattva to become a Buddha, it's imperative that one is enthusiastic about benefiting others, enthusiastic about virtuous endeavors. Being enthusiastic will mean the duration of the path, the intensity of one's practice that is required. This will not put one off at all. In fact, one will be enthusiastic about having to be amongst others and helping them in every way you can. So by engaging in this meditation, cultivating the highest of goals, focused on others, and an intense outlook with a duration that is extensive, this will build one's joyous perseverance.
Dishi manzu kewa samlo dila ntop chewa ta shuk chewa gyuni wa kate na kewa mangpo sa tuba na shin ta diba cheba nyeba shtibi ilyakaru chebe na nyomo ba kate shuk chewa yoba ta gyuni ngbi kewe diba chewa di muti shi gyuni bo cheba na diba di top chewa yungore yasa shi.
But these points just mentioned in how to cultivate a powerful motivation or attitude is not only in relation to virtue, but also non-virtue. This is the next sentence, the final sentence in the paragraph. When it comes to faulty conduct, an intense afflictive attitude and long duration also have great strength. So this then really comes down to the intensity of the afflictions in the mind, and then thereby the duration of those afflictions. So to the extent that one is habituated to the afflictions, not noticing them, not seeing them as wrong, to that extent, one will engage in intense and in non-virtue with an intensely powerful affliction, and that affliction may well abide for a great duration, and thereby leading to an immense amount of non-virtue being accumulated. So for example, if anger arises within you towards someone, if that anger is slight, you'll most probably be able to deal with it okay. But if that anger is intense, one is likely to express it. And if that anger has completely overwhelmed you, you'll end up swearing at the other person, screaming at the other person. So such behavior comes from a powerful afflicted mind. In this instance of anger, probably also with ignorance, the confused ignorance seeing what one is doing is justified. And from this then, of course, powerful non-virtue is accumulated. And this may be enhanced further by the intensity in terms of or the duration of this anger, in terms of a long-abiding hatred towards this person, that every time for an extensive period of time, every time you think of them, mind of dislike, of separation arises. So in this way, we can see from the intensity of the affliction and the duration of the affliction, powerful non-virtue is accumulated. And as a similar illustration, killing a sentient being, just killing a sentient being, or doing it again and again and again, we can clearly see how the second will lead to so much non-virtue coming. So in this particular strength, we covered the first sub-outline, now the second outline, which looks at amongst the many afflictions, the great negativity that anger leads to. Also among the mental afflictions, anger is particularly strong. Lama Tsongkhapa quotes from Shantideva. And I've just changed a word in the third line. Whatever good conduct has been amassed over 1,000 eons by generosity and venerating those gone to bliss, and so on, is all destroyed by one moment of anger. And As it says, whatever good conduct has been amassed, so all the virtue one has accumulated over an extensive period, 1,000 eons, by giving or generosity, and venerating those gone to bliss, so Sugatas, the Buddhas, and so on, is all destroyed by one moment of anger. So this final line, destroyed by one moment of anger. So this refers to if one is angry towards a bodhisattva, then the non-virtue accrued is so powerful that it will destroy all this previously accumulated virtue. Again, as clarifying that what we have in the last line is correct, it says one moment, because the Tibetan literally says just one. So one instance or one moment, which is a bit different. But he says the meaning is a single moment, one moment of anger.
And in again,
So when ourselves as ordinary beings get angry at our fellow ordinary beings, it is non-virtuous, but not to this extent. This specifically refers to when we are angry at these very powerful objects, bodhisattvas or Buddhas, then the non-virtue is as described here. But when one is being angry at a fellow ordinary being, then whilst non-virtuous, it's not to this extent. We recall what we looked at last night. The first of these 4 points, which is that the great strength by way of the field or recipient, that virtuous or non-virtuous acts directed towards the three jewels, lamas, those like lamas, one's parents, and bodhisattvas lead to a powerful result. So therefore, if one is angry at a bodhisattva, then great non-virtue is accumulated. So this ties precisely to what we looked at last night. And again, the reason is because of the quality of the mind of bodhicitta that abides in the continuum. It is that makes him so precious, that one is angry at a being who in their heart holds all beings as dear, and doesn't just hold them as dear, but wants to benefit them in the most important ways, the supreme way, lead them to attain a state freed of suffering. And therefore, this bodhisattva is striving to become a Buddha for the sake of others. This is why being angry at them leads to such powerful non-virtue.
Kondo 그래서 건축에 3등 50 염축 톱사로 신여금 3등 50 염축 톱하자 니가 건축을 사요 말이죠.
So this is advice being given to us beings in the desire realm. For those who have either are born in the formal formless realm or have developed the concentration of the form realm or an absorption of the formless realm, this advice doesn't apply because their afflictions of the desire realm are suppressed. They do not get angry. So therefore, this advice isn't for them as a being with a mind of the form or formless realm, because they cannot get angry. It's specifically for us desire realm beings. Beings in samsara all have afflictions, but there is a marked difference between those of the desire realm and those of the form and formless realm. So those of the desire realm, our non-virtue can lead us to rebirth in the lower realms. Whilst the beings in the form and formless realms have afflictions, those afflictions cannot lead to non-virtue that leads to rebirth in the lower realms. So the process by which we can achieve this state in this very life as ordinary desire realm beings is to develop single points of concentration, calm abiding, and then develop this further to where we attain a mind of the form realm, attain a mind of the first concentration of the form realm. So we'll still have this body, we'll still be here, but we'll have developed the quality of mind that is a mind of the form realm. And with that, one develops another quality, I don't know this word, and with that quality, one suppresses the desire realm afflictions. One is not free of the afflictions. One has the afflictions of the being of the first concentration of the form realm, but the afflictions of the desire realm are suppressed. So this is something that beings within the desire realm can and do achieve.
And then in the last, surely, my sister, my dear, did not show us, shall I show you, my.
So I just went on a little bit of a detour. This is not so applicable to what we have here, but nevertheless, it's interesting to know.
Lama
Tsongkhapa continues, here, anger towards those who perfectly observe their celibacy is very heavy, and anger towards bodhisattvas is heavier still. To explain this term, who perfectly observes their celibacy. So probably it's not quite as literal as this would appear to us. Who it refers to is if one generates anger towards someone with whom one has a Dharma connection, such as someone whom one receives an initiation from and bodhisattva vows from. So such a person, if one is angry towards them, one creates a great non-virtue. And even heavier than that is being angry at a bodhisattva. So this is then the meaning of this term, towards those who perfectly observe their celibacy. The meaning So to explain then this term, perfectly observe their celibacy, because this is literally what it says, but it has a meaning that really isn't apparent from that, is that a person who's perfectly observing their celibacy, it doesn't mean that literally. It means someone who is observing or keeping excellent ethics in order to become a Buddha for the sake of others. That is what it's referring to. So it comes down not so much to perfectly observing celibacy, but more than that, it comes down to the meaning of why they are doing so. And then moreover, in this context here, in terms of the negativity, one has a Dharma connection with them, such as, for example, one receives vows from them or initiation from them and so forth. So when one has a Dharma connection with such a person who is guarding their ethics excellently in order to become a Buddha, if one is angry at them, it is greatly non-virtuous. Observe their celibacy. Yeah, he perfectly observes their celibacy. When you take the three Tibetan words together, you come out with perfectly observe their celibacy. What it means is, in detail, is quite a lot deeper than that. So the first word is, that can be translated as celibacy, is also the word for the deity or the god Brahma. It's also a word that can be translated for a Buddha or Nirvana or whole and complete. So it's quite a broad word. That's the first. So here, in terms of the deeper meaning, we can take it not as celibacy, but that perhaps of Nirvana or even Buddhahood. And then the second term is that of similar to or likewise. And the third term is that of conduct or behavior. So like in the text, Bodhisattva's way of life, that word way of life is also Bodhisattva deeds or Bodhisattva conduct, Bodhisattva behavior. So this word behavior or conduct. So when you look at the words individually, you get the deeper meaning of what Geshe is bringing out. There is conduct or behavior that leads to the attainment of nirvana, nirvana in the sense of non-abiding nirvana, Buddhahood. So that is the type of person, the person who is engaging in behavior that leads to Buddhahood. So this is what is being referred to here. So someone who's, this is the deeper meaning of this term, perfectly observe their celibacy. And so the behavior will refer to any behavioral conduct that is required in order to attain Buddhahood. So that's quite a deeper meaning than the more literal, perfectly observing their celibacy. And again, then to what is meant in this line, if one has a Dharma connection with such a person, established perhaps through receiving initiation or vows, then being angry at such a person, someone who is engaging in the various activities to become a Buddha, this will lead to great negativity. And such a person may well be a bodhisattva, but they may also not be a bodhisattva. But if such a person is not a bodhisattva, then the negativity is less than getting angry at an actual bodhisattva. So the text continues, even heavier than getting angry at someone with whom you have a Dharma connection with, and that person whom is engaging in the various activities in order to become a Buddha, but not yet a bodhisattva. Even getting angry at such a person, whilst greatly negative, is not as negative as getting angry at a bodhisattva. That's the end of the sentence. And then Lama Tsongkhapa quotes from the King of Concentration Sutra, and I've just changed my own preference, one word in the last line. If someone harbors harmful intent for another, ethical conduct or studying cannot protect him, nor can meditative concentration or solitude, nor generosity or venerating the Buddha. So looking at the first line, if someone harbors harmful intent for another. So here the way to understand this for another is it's referring to the kind of person referred to above, translated as perfectly observe their celibacy. So someone with whom you have a Dharma connection with, someone you've received vows from, someone you've perhaps received initiation from, someone who's engaging the various deeds that will lead to Buddhahood. So if one gets angry at such a person, so that's the meaning of the first line. So if one harbors harmful intent for such a person, your ethical conduct cannot protect you from this non-virtue, nor can your education in the Dharma, nor can your meditative concentration or retreating to solitude, nor practicing generosity to ordinary beings or to Buddhas, venerating the Buddha. None of this will be able to protect you from the non-virtue created by harmful intent towards such a person. The meaning then of what we've looked at here, great strength by way of the attitude, is that our motivation makes an immense difference in terms of how much virtue or non-virtue we accumulate. And then the second part we looked at is amongst the non-virtuous motivations, that of anger is particularly harmful. And anger itself leads to non-virtue, but if the object towards whom that anger is directed, that too can make a great, or does make a great difference in terms of the amount of non-virtue accumulated. So both the affliction of anger as well as towards whom the anger is directed. So this then brings us to the end of a section. We've been looking at the heaviness of karma. So we've looked at that from two perspectives, last time and now this time. And this comes to and brings us through the section we're still looking at, non-virtuous actions and their effects. So we've looked at the non-virtuous actions a couple of weeks ago, or a month ago, at the 10 non-virtues. And now we come to a presentation of their effects. This started from the outline in our books from page 123. So now we come to a presentation of their effects. So whether a karmic result, an effect, is one of happiness or suffering, a virtuous result, or a result from virtue, or a result from non-virtue, then there are, it has 3 points. The fully ripened effect, the effect concordant with the cause, and the dominant or environmental effect. So there are two different in Tibetan words that have the same meaning. One is translated as dominant, one as environmental, but the meaning would be the same. If we think of the 10 non-virtues that we looked at a month ago, so those 10 non-virtues, when accumulated completely, lead to the potential of ripening, a fully ripened effect. So the first of the three types of effects, a fully ripened effect. And a fully ripened effect has 3 parts. So this means that the fully ripened effect can be one that's powerful, middling, or minor, or weak. And when we think of the 4 components that make up a complete karmic action, that's of basis, intention, and of basis, attitude, performance, and completion, there was quite some variety in there. So, for example, in terms of intention, there was there the affliction. So there are different types of afflictions. Most of the 10 non-virtues, any of the 3 root afflictions could be applied, but they can be of greater intensity or lesser intensity. So therefore, from that difference, or the difference in terms of the basis, or performance, or performance, then the result, the fully ripened result, can be particularly powerful, middling, or weaker. So, for example, if one accrues the non-virtuous karmic act of killing, one accrues a complete non-virtuous karmic act. If this was a powerful misdeed because of the various combinations of those 4 components, it was a powerful non-virtuous imprint. If it ripens as a rebirth, its fully ripened effect will be strong, and it will lead to rebirth in the hells. If those components, which those 4 components, are of middling strength, leading to a karmic imprint of middling strength, its fully ripened effect will lead to rebirth as a spirit. And if those 4 components lead to a weaker non-virtuous imprint from killing being accumulated, its fully ripened effect will be weaker, leading to rebirth as an animal. So this little bit we've covered here in terms of the effects or results ties very nicely to what we've looked at this weekend. That by looking at the result and the way results come about, this further reinforces our understanding in terms of causes and the various components that go into the accumulation of a cause. And then what we've looked at in between that, what makes a cause heavy or light. So here, the way to take this and incorporate in your own meditations, in your own training, is to cultivate a motivation of bodhicitta before every day and before one engages in virtuous activity. In particular, as one goes through the day engaging in various virtuous activities, remind oneself of that motivation of bodhicitta cultivated that morning. Because the motivation of bodhicitta has as its objective the attainment of Buddhahood. And why do you want to attain Buddhahood? For the benefit of others. So you becoming a Buddha, clearly you will benefit. But your focus on why you want to do that is for others. Then within this motivation is one has the object of all sentient beings. And here one is cultivating the recognition that all sentient beings matter. They all have value to me, not some more than others, all equally matter. Therefore, how I engage with them matters. And this cultivation in this motivation, we can see how later it will help prevent us from acting in a non-virtuous manner and creating non-virtue, because one is developing a tenderness, a closeness towards others. And then there's this ongoing development of the motivation of bodhicitta. One will be very clear on what is virtuous, what is non-virtuous, and how to help others, not wanting to add to their suffering, but wanting to be of benefit to them. So this greatly helps our meditations on ethics and generosity and patience, whereby we are not wanting to harm others, but we are wanting to benefit them. So this is expressions of ethics and generosity, and aids our meditations on patience, not wanting to harm others, but to respond to them with care and kindness. So in this way, by cultivating a motivation of bodhicitta, one is protecting oneself from engaging in harm towards others and encouraging oneself to engage with others in a way that is truly beneficial. So this then I encourage you to take and incorporate into your daily training, your daily meditations. And then thank you. We can conclude there for this weekend. Thank you.